we're going to be learning about the Hasidic Revolution. So before we can explain the Hasidic Revolution, we got to explain how a revolution works. So the notes are there. I'm just going to speak it outside so you won't have to take notes. And if you have questions, you'll ask questions. There's four stages to a revolution. In Lashon HaKodesh, we call it a Mahapecha. Mahapecha means where things get turned upside down. So the first step of the revolution is there has to be the recognition of a crisis. Meaning, people, it could be a person, it could be talking about a revolution in a person's personal life or with people, right? They identify that they are living in a crisis and they can't go on living that way. This is not tolerable anyway, no matter what it is. So there's demand for a change to take place. And these people are preparing themselves to find some kind of solution to the crisis that they are in. So you could use the mushal of the American Revolution in the 1770s, where they said it was intolerable that they had to be under British rule, taxes and all these things. So it got to the point where there was a crisis. We can't live this way anymore. Okay, step one. Step two. Formulation of an alternative. Okay, if you have to find a plan that's going to resolve the crisis with a specific change, and that will take care of the problem that's there. Step three, you begin to put into practice the solution which has been devised. Meaning, there's got to be a solution. It's not enough just to critique and say, this is bad, this is bad, this is bad. You got to say, there's a solution, right? And the means of practically carrying it out. A lot of people say, well, if I was prime minister, I'd do this and this and that. Yeah, but then when you get into the office, you see, you can't do this and this and that. A lot of times you have an alternative, it's not practical, and you don't do it. So you have to put it into practice. The alternative has to be something that can be put into practice, and you practice it. And step four, there's got to be a means to continue the revolution, meaning to say you have to have followers, students, we're going to keep this going. If it's a revolution for just one generation, then it's not a revolution, right? If something is MS, it's going to last and continue, all right? So, every revolution, industrial revolution, all these kinds of revolutions, now, it could be, it's not for anyone's best interest. Could be people don't like the situation they're in, but maybe the situation wasn't so bad. Let's say the situation really wasn't bad, but people are spoiled and they say, "Ah, this is terrible. We need to change," right? But it doesn't necessarily mean the change is any good. But those are the four steps to a revolution that's a successful revolution. Revolution is not necessarily bad. Revolution means we're changing the way things have been done. We're changing the way things have been done. It's not good the way things are now. So since it's not good the way things are now, so we're going to change them. We have an alternative, we're going to put it into practice, and we're going to continue. We're going to have students who are going to follow it. Okay, so this is, we'll now apply the four stages of the Hasidic Revolution. And the first thing, and it's going to take a long time, is identifying what the crisis was. Okay, now we're talking about a revolution that went on in the beginning of the 18th century in Eastern Europe. We're specifically talking about that, although this will really not affect as much, like say the Sephardim or people in Western Europe, but Eastern Europe was the main place of where Yidden lived. So the problem was, the crisis was, there was a physical and spiritual destruction of the Jewish people. Now, we never had it good. We never had it good throughout our history. But there was tremendous poverty in Europe. And we know with the Khmelnytsky era, was in 1648 and 1649, 25% of the Yidden were killed. People don't realize that's significant numbers. Everybody experienced a loss. There were now, and mostly men were killed. So there's cities now and towns filled with widows and orphans. Tens of thousands of women were raped. So just in terms of physical state. It was like the lowest physical state and degradation that the Jews had experienced since the Churban Beis HaMikdash. There were ancient kehilos that were there for long periods of time, and they just got decimated. So we're not gonna compare it to the Holocaust, but for its time, at its time, it was would have been considered a Holocaust of what happened in terms of just how much destruction happened on a physical level. So this is not a good thing for Jews. And then this set the Jews up, unfortunately, for the next destruction, which would be the spiritual destruction. Because soon after that, Shabtai Tzvi comes on the scene, and he, so to speak, exploited the low state of the Jews. And it's understandable how hundreds of thousands of Jews who are feeling that, you know, that the Mashiach should come after all this suffering. So they believed that he was the Mashiach. And he didn't just fool the average Amoritz. There were huge Talmidei Chachamim who thought that he was the Mashiach, because he was indeed an incredible character. He was a big Talmud Chacham. He was very pious. He had a lot going for him. And many people were seduced to follow him because he offered comfort and hope for the Jews. And the problem was, and you know, people were debating, is he the Mashiach? And a lot of Gedolim said he were. There were a lot of Gedolim who were skeptical, but that would happen no matter who would be the Mashiach. But there was a great groundswell of hope. But then the great disappointment happened when he converts to Islam. So that was like the final straw. It was bad enough we were physically beaten, and we continue to be physically beaten. Then we're lifted up. Oh, things are going to get better. It's like, you know, Lahavdol, you know, like when Moshe Rabbeinu came. Okay, we're going to take you out now. You know, and if it would have taken like a longer process, the chapter see just wasn't one day. It was a few years. So let's say Moshe Rabbeinu, it was a few years he was back, and he's building up their hopes and spirits. And then imagine, Moshe goes to the palace, and what does he do? He now becomes the viceroy of Egypt to go and now be bad to the Jews.
Right.
So you can imagine how the Jews would feel. Their hope now has turned on them. So now it's a combination of physical and spiritual destruction. Now, the early Hasidim, they knew what the problem was. They understood. This is point one, recognition of the crisis, that Jewish life had become physically impossible. The restrictions that the non-Jews placed on us was impossible. The parets letting you rent, you couldn't own property. You couldn't do anything that would be normal to find a livelihood. You have to be involved in dangerous types of ways of making money. Oh, you think a frum yid wanted to own an inn where drunks would come and threaten their lives, and they'd have to pay the rent to the parts, and if they didn't pay the rent, the parts would throw them in. You never know what mood the parts was in. Jews were in the lowest levels, like since the Churban Beis HaMikdash, and they were just totally physically exhausted and spiritually exhausted. So now, and the work conditions were terrible, and more than that, because now you figure now, as time passes, fathers are getting murdered. Who's teaching their kid Torah? No one's teaching their kid any Torah. If you were lucky and you didn't get murdered and you were, you know, then you were able to learn Torah. But the Jews were very illiterate at this time. Aside what they saw from their parents of how to keep Yiddish, but the ignorance was mind-boggling, and they were also were illiterate in halacha. Okay, so figuring out this is where we're at. Now, not every Jew was. On the other hand, you have huge Talmidei Chachamim around. So now, the illiterate would want to turn to the huge Talmidei Chachamim to get chizuk. That's what they would want. So the problem is, and this is a very difficult issue to understand, but the Gedolim at that time, they failed to understand and deal with the crisis properly. And they were completely detached from the average struggling Jew. They had no empathy for them. And the only connection, so now, what connection did your average ignorant Jew have to the scholars? Well, you know, they go to shul. They don't know how to daven. But come, let's say, and they, in those days, they didn't give drushes every Shabbos, right? But they come in whatever, it's a Shabbos, shuva, drusha, this and that. So they come, now, what did they need? They needed chizuk. That's what they needed, real chizuk. So what did they get instead? Imagine the Shabbos Shuva Drasha would go something like this. First of all, it would be a pilpul for 45 minutes that nobody in the world understands a word of it. Just a few scholars in the shul who were scholars, they understood. But the common folk who knew, you know this from our grandparents. Yeah, your grandparents were scholars till they all got murdered. They come to hear words from the rabbi, and he's talking about, Tukfa Kohen and these complicated Yishlomi Das Sugyas, and you know, they're lost. And then when they switch into the Agadat point, right, in the Drush, then what do? They say, now we have to look at the source of all our problems. And what's the source of all our problems? Is because you guys, you're not learning Torah, you're wasting time. You're not doing this, you're not doing this. The women aren't dressing sneistic. There's no Yerushamayim. You're terrible. And you want to know why we're suffering? You know why? Because of you guys. Shkoyach. You know what that's like? That would be like if right after the Holocaust, you come to a shul and you're a Holocaust survivor, and you come to a shul in a DP camp, and the rabbi in the DP camp says, you want to know the Holocaust was because of you. So what did they get from the Gedolim? Just words of rebuke, right? There was such a disconnect to the average Jew to be made to feel that they were at fault for everything that's happening. So the truth is that the Talmid Chachamim leadership was a great source of suffering for the Jews. You know, and it's not, you know, and you keep finding this. You know, it hasn't changed in certain areas. In certain areas, it hasn't changed. You know, for example, you know, you have years ago, you know, when you had Sima Shas. We still have the Sima Shas. But like years ago, let's say in the 60s and the 70s, the Sima Shas is, what do you call it? You know, you'd expect, you know, all kinds of people come to Sima Shas. And the majority of them are not exactly the biggest scholars in the world. Who learned Daf Yomi, you know what I mean? And you have Rabbanim get up and they speak pilpuls at the Sima Shas for the longest time. They say speak for 5 minutes and they say a pilpul for a half an hour. So you try, and people want to get encouraged. They're not encouraged by any of this. So that's the problem. You constantly find that they're not in touch. You know, people, you have the whole failure of the yeshiva system for people who can't make the yeshiva system, right? And they said, it's not my problem. Okay, so Baruch Hashem, there's some who are dealing with it. But in general, if a guy can't learn, even today, you're out of the game. In the Litvisha world, you're out of the game. And therefore, it doesn't do well. And this was a great crisis. So it was in this black era that the Baal Shem Tov was born into this era. There's a machlokas exactly when he was born, either 1698 or 1700. It doesn't really matter. But he was born and he would be bringing the light of the Mashiach, as we will see. Now, his life was divided into two parts. The first 36 years of his life when he was hidden, his tzitkus was hidden. And the next part of his life where he was revealed after that time. He was so hidden that his brother-in-law, and that's a name you should remember, his brother-in-law was Gershon Kitever. When he found out that his sister was going to marry such an ignoramus, he was horrified. But the truth of the matter is, the Baal Shem Tov had hidden his godless. And everyone just thought he was already a srulik. You know, a shamish, he just cleans up, but people didn't realize that he was mamish, an unbelievable ilui. But they didn't know this. Then it was when he was 36 on Shavuos, he began to reveal who he was. And in a short time, he had many students. And that's, so to speak, the revolution began. And he lived long enough to clarify the fundamentals of Hasidus to his students, and the Hasidim with the students will be the ones to continue that. And his main students, as we'll see, was the Maggid of Mezrich, was a big student, and the Toldos Yaakov Yosef. He had a grandson, the Degel Machane Ephraim. These were the ones who began to, and the movement began to really take shape, not just in theory, but with a real plan. And the students began to teach the plan, not only to great scholars, but in earnest, by the time the Mezrich Maggid was around, to spread it to all people. Okay, now, the only document that we have that actually was written by the Baal Shem Tov was his famous letter that he wrote in 1747 that he sent to his brother-in-law. And it was called, when he had an Aliyas Neshama on Rosh Hashanah. And then we're going to read that letter, because even though we're not going to understand it all, but at least you got to read the letter once to know, because that's the beginning of Hasidus. So that's the other thing I sent to you. I don't know if we're going to get to it today. We might start it today.
Original Rebbe's letter.
The what? Yes.
And the original Rebbe's letter.
That's right. Now, I have a safer. And even they have a picture, a photocopy of his handwriting.
It's, oh.
So, it, like, but that's... Now, there's a lot of stuff were written from what he taught. But that's already his students writing it. So it's already like one step removed. But this is his mamish, what he wrote. Anyway, that's the only authentic document, and it very briefly discusses what Chassid is about. You're not going to learn Chassidus from that document, but you guess got to learn it once. Okay, so the question is, what was the Chiddush? What was the good news of the Baal Shem Tov that he brought to the world? So here's in a nutshell, he says, of course, no one's going to deny the importance of learning Torah. No one's going to deny the importance of doing mitzvahs. However, here's where the mistake happens. That although he wasn't really machadish anything, he didn't make anything up new. It's all in the Torah, but he shifted our focus back to where the focus was supposed to be. He said, the goal of living in this world, the goal is not to learn Torah and to do mitzvahs. That's not the goal. They are just a means for the goal. A means for the goal. They're not an end unto themselves. They're connected to the goal, but they're not the goal. And that you got to realize when you're dealing with priorities, the goal is the priority. Yes, you're only going to get to that goal if you learn Torah and you do mitzvahs. That's true. But it is not the goal. And therefore, if a person is ignorant from Yiddishkeit, you know, that doesn't mean necessarily that he can't reach the goal. Right? And this is what the Baal Shem Tov, now in the notes, a lot of times I'll refer to him as the Besht, because it's a lot shorter to write Besht, which stands for, it's Beis Ayin Shin Tes, which is Baal Shem Tov. So the Baal Shem Tov came into the world to reveal the ultimate truth that's going to carry us to the end of time. And our ultimate goal is to have a direct encounter with Hashem, to experience Tveikus with Hashem, a living, breathing relationship with Hashem, which not necessarily can only happen through Torah. Now, with that breakthrough, this made all the Jews no longer feel like outsiders looking in from the great scholars. See, what was also happening, unfortunately, now figure how long are Jews going to live with suffering, physical and spiritual disappointment, and spiritual browbeating from their rabbis? What eventually do you think Jews were doing? They were leaving. They were packing their bags. It's the end of Yiddishkeit. I'm not interested. I'm going to go to France. I'm going to find, you know, I'll shave my beard and become a goy, and I'll assimilate. Because remember, if you were a goy, a lot more opportunities were available to you. This was a real crisis. You don't have to, you know, so that was already happening then in the late 1600s. Yidden were leaving. Okay, it was a little bit harder. It was physically more difficult, but they were leaving the fold. But now, and also because they didn't feel they have it, there was getting nothing out of Yiddishkeit. How long can you suffer with a religion? So, but now when the Baal Shem Tov says no, you can really be an amazing, worthwhile Jew who's part of the Jewish program. So like in a flash, the Jews were revealed that every single moment of your life is filled with meaning. That now when you're eating, when you're sleeping, when you're talking, when you're dreaming, when you're joking, all these things, when you're working, there's tremendous spiritual potential that everybody could have a relationship with Hashem at that time. And the broken Jew who felt so worthless and so guilty from all sides, suddenly these Jews were hearing the Baal Shem Tov that your life's very important. So the first time since the Churban, it became possible for Jews to feel good about their religion. And as it were, like the Rabbi Nachman says, that life is really a song that you're supposed to sing. So they were beginning to sing. Now it's very interesting, a side note, nigunim that we have, we don't really know any nigunim that we have a Masorah from the times before the Baal Shem Tov. It was almost as if there was like no songs. I mean, there's a lot of piyutim, there's a lot of poetry, but real nigunim, since the Churban, people had no reason to sing. So the Baal Shem Tov, as he was bringing the light of the Mashiach, songs like singing since the times of the temple resumed, and not just by special Levim, but all kinds of people would be singing this song. So that's what Hasidus was bringing along. Now, of course, every revolution is going to have people who will not want the revolution. Just like in England, they didn't want the revolution. So certainly, who would be against the revolution? The old school Rabbanim says, what are you doing? Don't you know that Torah is the most important thing? We can't compromise on Torah and mitzvah observance and this. And the people aren't sneers at all these terrible things. This is where they were true. It was right. But they didn't understand. But what we got to do with there's an ideal and then there's the reality. The reality is, you know, there are people who aren't able to learn. So what do? Just yell and scream at them? So, you know, so in this modern world now where we've really come around a little bit to understand that we have to have empathy and this and that and everybody has a place, you know, Baruch Hashem. But in those days, it was a miserable, miserable life. The only thing that kept Jews to be Jews is because the Goyim were worse. The Goyim were just drunken pigs. So a Jew figured, you know, they still would rather be a Jew than a Goy, because Germany and France became more civilized, the Goyim didn't look like such pigs. They were able to conceal it. It was Esav. Only till Hitler came around could you see how pigs they were. But so Jews were suffering. Man, they were Jews. So they're trying to get out, and if you could get out, you would get out. And the matzav was so sad. So now they say, we're going to change this all. You know what? You don't have to learn. Can you imagine when a gadol hears, you don't have to learn. You don't have to do so many mitzvahs. It's terrible. So this is the state we're in. Okay, I hear it's a good time to stop. And next week, now the letter, it's good really because I don't have one sheet that has the full letter. So I'm going to fax you some stuff next week that has the full letter. And we'll go through the letter of the Rebbe.